7:04 p.m. Tuesday, January 27, 2026. I call the Wrangell Assembly to order. Tonight, the Pledge of Allegiance will be led by Assembly Member Powers.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Yes, Assembly Members Powers.
Here.
Mock, I believe, is not on the line. Audison.
Here.
Thank you. Dalrymple.
Here.
Powell.
Here.
DeBoard.
Here.
And Mayor Gilbert.
Here. Ceremonial matters, there are none for tonight. Item three, persons to be heard.
That would have been pretty.
Thank you. Yes. Okay, first up is Jim Freeman. Do you want to speak now or on a particular item?
Speak now.
Okay.
Okay, so try to make it short, quickly as possible. On two levels. First of all, wanted to really thank Kate, Mason, this whole team, Wrangell, for all the stuff that you guys are doing. I've mentioned this before many times, but there is a lot of vision and there is a lot of, and we know we need change. I think everybody in the community feels the same way about the fact that we know we've got to do something. With that, and without making sure that I'm respectful in all ways, there is a lot of this stuff that obviously the community's weighing in on. I know you know what's going on Facebook and elsewhere. A lot happening that way. And we're trying to, I think everybody's respectfully trying to deal with those things. We're trying to get that in the right order. There were people, some in the room, and there are people here now that have a lot of experience in different areas here that will help in this process, I think. When I heard about GreenSpark, I know there's been a number of meetings before this with other committees. There's been feedback on that. There are options. And I think, I wish I would have had a chance to talk to GreenSpark and say great ideas. I mean, I've studied their system a little bit. It is amazing as far as new age in a lot of ways. At the same time saying they have a lot of options they can do. And we have to really understand our energy structure. And there are people in this community that really do understand, you know, and you might be well served to actually meet with some of those people. There are some options. I don't know what everybody saw in the market today, but what happened with the dollar and what's happened with gold and silver and all that. That's because there's change going on and that will affect this community. It will affect some of the economic things. So vision is good. And what you have to kind of do is look at that ROI and look at what we're doing and who we want to be. I think that's what you're trying to do with getting the town hall meetings together. So I'll just mention this. I don't know how many people have seen what's happened this last weekend, but there was a legend passed away this weekend. And that guy has put in hundreds of thousands of dollars in this community, if not more. And also back in Washington, and also with the governors, past and present, and with senators and so forth, taking this town up there. Now, he was a Senate. I'm not saying him and I were very close friends. We have a little different way of going at things, but we had read a lot of the same stuff. And what I will say is that many months ago, he had done a lot of the hard work for free in terms of studying in AML, potential costs, different things that the community is still asking for. And I know that's coming, should come first before decisions are made. But I think that's stuff that in his legacy and for his family and remembrance, because, you know, both his son and his son's best friend are the two highest producers here on the fishing side in the sanding realm. And in the otter thing that he had predicted, I think going back 6-7 years ago that I was talking to him. Longer than that is now an issue here. And there are, and he had made it clear, there's already laws on the record that could be used. It's advocating that stuff. Now, I know there was supposed to be some meetings with fishermen, haven't happened yet, but that is an industry here. And I'm not just promoting that. I'm just saying in Mike's memory of what was going on, he loved the community. And the big thing is there is no, this is what I'm trying to promote. That's why I'm working with, I think everybody's great. It's not an us. We're all us. You know, we're all here. And we have to look at what serves everybody, not just a select group. Ideas are great. And there's wisdom in a multitude of councils, et cetera, Proverbs. And it's also the fact that, you know, the one thing I've learned a long time ago is the wise man is the one that says, I don't know. You know, it's not a bad thing to say, I don't know, and to get the information. Somebody that does know can take you for a ride if you don't know what they're talking about. And that's where you look at people who do so that you can get the information you need to make the decisions. I think that's what we're all trying to do. So when you're seeing that stuff out there, it's because there's a lot of people going, hey, this is running around so fast, and yet we haven't had a chance to see numbers, which you usually want to see first, you know, to see how that effect is. And you have the studies, not just the high level stuff. They're all good things. I've said this before, every single project we have is a great project. Question comes into the cost, the time, when to execute them. And I know that I've been in business for over 40 years. So I'm saying I know the reason we've survived 70 years as a company is because of that. Take the time to do that due. Otherwise, we can have what we've had before a lot of times where you get a project, sounds great, but something happens out there in the economy, like the timber industry fell apart. And, you know, those numbers were contested, by the way, Mason, as far as like how many people we had here, upwards of 3,500. But the state and them fought about that. But the fact is, we've had a lot of people here, but we've had changes. Same thing is going on with all the rest of it. There may be changes in the tourism if you're looking at what's going on in the economy right now. We may be dealing with inflation again. So we got to think ahead. So that's what I wanted to say. I hope we get these town hall meetings, but really they need to happen because the voices are getting louder up there. Thank you.
That was always the plan. And the community member that Jim Freeman was talking about was Michael Lockaby.
Yes.
I want to say his name. All right. Thank you for that testimony. Amendments to the agenda. Okay, hearing none, let's move on. Conflict of interest. Any assembly member have any conflict? Assembly member DeBoard.
13B on the timelines. I am a search employee for 10. It's one's reference.
I'll declare you to have a conflict. So you will sit out on that. Thank you. Any other conflicts? All right. Consent agenda. I need a motion.
Move to approve consent agenda as submitted.
Okay.
Motion by Powell, second by DeBoard. Any discussion? Okay. Poll vote, please.
Assembly members Powell?
Yes.
DeBoard?
Yes.
Powers?
Yes.
Audison?
Yes.
Dalrymple?
Yes.
And Mayor Gilbert?
Yes. Item 7A, Borough Manager's Report.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'm going to defer to a couple colleagues in the room. I believe Director Waiter has a little bit of remarks on water treatment. And then I know that Chief Meeks got a new application to share as it relates to school safety. And then I know that our finance director's got a brief summary of our Q2 budget report. So
great.
I'll try to keep my remarks brief.
Good.
Great. Thanks, Mason. Thank you, Madam Mayor, Assembly, members of the public. I'm here, Tom Waiter, Public Works Director here for the city. I'm just going to talk briefly about our water quality, specifically chlorine taste and smell. Had a number of inquiries from members of the public asking questions about it, and just want to try to provide some information that kind of helps explain and give people a better understanding of maybe why things taste a little bit different this year than what they did last year. And so I do have some notes here, so I'm going to read off of these quite a bit just to make sure I get a lot of the numbers and information fully accurate here and correct. So Wrangell has been disinfecting its drinking water with some form of chlorine since at least 1953, when the original chlorine gas shack went in at Panhandle Trailer Court. Currently, sodium hypochlorite is used, which is basically a less concentrated form of chlorine than chlorine gas. Chlorine gas is 100% chlorine. We're currently generating a 0.8% solution of sodium hypochlorite on site using a National Sanitation Foundation certified salt. Basically, it's a safer form of chlorine for both operators and for the water system and for the public. Every municipal drinking water system that has a surface water or groundwater system that is at risk of fecal contamination in the United States is required by law to disinfect their water. The Safe Water Drinking Act of 1974 initially established these parameters, and they have been amended over time. The Surface Water Treatment Rule, an amendment to the Safe Water Drinking Act, mandates disinfection for protection against microbial contaminants such as cryptosporidium, ensuring water is safe for consumption. The idea being that even in the most advanced treatment systems, pathogens could still make it through the treatment process, or pathogens could even be picked up in the distribution system post-treatment. Maintaining a free chlorine residual establishes confidence that even if a pathogenic organism made it through, or post-treatment contamination of the water system were to occur, the risk of public health could still be mitigated. In Alaska, drinking water is regulated by the Department of Environmental Conservation. Currently, the maximum regulatory limit for entry point residual chlorine is 4.0 milligrams per liter. We are required to maintain a detectable residual in the distribution system, meaning that we have to go as far as our water pipes extend. We have to be able to turn on the tap, and chlorine should show up like essentially a medium. So we are required by law to keep that. We could dose up to 4 milligrams per liter. On average right now, we're dosing about 0.6 milligrams per liter. So, you know, 1/7 basically of what we could be. In essence, we try to keep the dose as low as we can while staying in compliance and ensuring the public safety. It's difficult to provide an apples to apples comparison with the old water plant, just because the systems are so different with the new plant. One way we could try to correlate this, just to try to put some numbers to it for people, is by the amount of salt used to generate the sodium hypochlorite, because that is something that we do track. So when we compare the old plant to the old plant was using approximately 300% more salt. This indicates we needed a lot more chlorine to maintain that residual level, thus implying cleaner water today. I will throw out a caveat of that, as it was a 20-year-old system. You know, maybe it wasn't as efficient, so maybe, you know, 300%, maybe that's on the higher end, but nonetheless, substantially cleaner water here today. Long story short, the chlorine has always been there. The reason you're tasting it now is because the chlorine has not chemically reacted with particulates in the water, creating disinfection byproducts. This is because our new water treatment plant produces cleaner water than the old plant. Disinfection byproducts are known carcinogens that can cause cancer over time. Historically, Wrangell had struggled with disinfection byproducts, especially the further you got from the water treatment plant. This was the primary reasoning for us building our brand new water treatment plant last year. Areas that are further away from the plant, especially ones that have low flows, had high disinfection byproducts. And that was something that we had struggled with for years. And that's primarily due to the water age in the pipes. The longer the water is in the pipe, the more time the chlorine has to react, the higher the disinfection byproducts go. This also means that the chlorine has to be higher in town so that it is still present after sitting in the pipes for longer, you know, in a place like out the road, all the way on the north end of Evergreen. You know, this is a delicate balance and a delicate process for us to try to strike that fine balance. Generally speaking, the water on Wood Street is going to have a stronger chlorine taste as it is closer to the water plant than, is closer to the water plant, and the chlorine hasn't had time to turn into disinfection byproducts. When weather and supply permit, the Public Works Department flushes approximately 50,000 gallons a night at 6 Mile to try to turn water over and help keep the chlorine low. The yellow apparatus on the fire hydrant at 6 Mile is used for this. Typically, it runs from midnight to 6 a.m., and we'll dump about 50,000 gallons in the ditch, and that's to decrease the water age in the pipes to help with our disinfection byproduct issues. This also could tie into developments out the road. We're dumping that water in the ditch right now. So if anything, having more consumption at the end of the line would benefit us. Of course, there's a limit to that, but the short answer is it would be beneficial. The level of turbidity, which is a matter of cloudiness and levels of organic carbon, drives the amount of disinfectant needed to meet the residual requirements. Current regulatory limit for our treatment process is 0.3 NTUs, which stands for Nephelometric Turbidity Unit. Under our old water treatment plant, the limit was 1.49 NTU, and oftentimes the turbidity leaving the old plant would have been at or at times even beyond what our current like maximum limit is now. We commonly exceeded that under the old plan. So DEC, once we built a new plant, came in and said, great, you have a nice new state-of-the-art facility. Now you're going to have to meet a much stricter water quality standard, which is a good thing for residents. What this means is that under the old plant, a fair amount of particulate was making it through the filtration process. This particulate had that chemical reaction with the chlorine that turned it into a different form, disinfection byproducts. Current water treatment plant is producing water of an NTU as low as 0.02. So way, 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 way under the regulatory limit of 0.3.
Best quarters we've ever had on record, right?
Yes.
By far.
Our three quarters that we have tested for since the new plant has been in operation are our best three quarters that we've had in, you know, almost 15 years of keeping records. So that's fantastic.
Keep that in mind, 15 years.
Yeah. Okay, so the good news is there's less particulate to react with to create cancer-causing disinfection byproducts. The bad news is the chlorine doesn't fully get used up because there's not as many things for it to react and interact with. And that's leaving a little bit more of a chlorine taste and smell than what people were historically used to. So, you know, according to the Environmental Protection Agency, levels of chlorine in municipal drinking water systems are not known to have long-term adverse health effects, whereas disinfection byproducts do. You know, a number of residents have been reporting these concerns to us, and ultimately we're trying to keep it as low as we can while keeping people safe and staying within the confines of the law. You know, many people probably don't realize, like, water treatment, like many things, like, there's always going to be some level of a trade-off, right? And, you know, you could look at all kinds of different studies that talk about bottled water that struggle with disinfection byproducts, the thing that we built a brand new water plant for. You know, another issue with bottled water is, you know, things like microplastics, and there's not a lot of, you know, I think a lot of research is still coming out as far as, like, the long-term effects on the human body from things like that in bottled water. So ultimately, the consumer needs to educate themselves and make their own informed decisions. A handful of recommendations for people who are struggling with the chlorine smell or taste: leave your water bottle cap open. The chlorine smell will dissipate and evaporate. Boil your water before consumption or utilize a filtration system, whether that's a Brita or a Berkey, or you put an inline filter in underneath your house in your water line. That's going to help reduce that chlorine taste and smell for you. You can find more information about our water quality from our consumer confidence report. We post it every single year in June. Now, keep in mind that the one that is up there currently would have been from 2024. So it was our old water treatment plant. So our new water treatment plant, the consumer confidence report, should be coming out for that here in June. And that's going to kind of give an overview of, hey, these are the things that we test for. This is kind of our water quality, and this is kind of how we're performing. And people should look those things up and read it. You can find that on our website. And if you have any other questions or concerns, feel free to reach out to the Public Works Department at 874-3904. And I'm open to any and all questions.
Tommy nailed it. Thank you for that.
Thank you. Good explanation. Okay. And a good job on clearing the snow. Good snow removal.
Thank you. We're back to normal weather now here for the next week.
Oh, now you
knock on wood, everybody. Hey, any questions?
Well,
could have been clearer.
Okay.
Yeah, I may have a question later for you on, I don't want to steal the thunder of the secondary disinfection of our outfall pipe. Do we have it nailed down to what we have to disinfect, to what degree we need to disinfect?
No, we're still very early on in that process. Basically, we just started our new permit here in November, and we have 5 years to fulfill that mandate and obligation. And so over the course of this first year, we will be doing, you know, essentially a preliminary engineering report to study what level of disinfection or type of disinfection will be most appropriate and best suited for Wrangell. You know, there's really only a couple of options: chlorine gas, UV. You could do something like ozone, things like that. They all come with their own trade-offs. So electricity versus hazardous gases, you know, kind of like everything, there's a trade-off. What I'm more concerned with is if there, you know, ends up being another, you know, government shutdown and the budget doesn't get passed, because we are still awaiting $10 million in funding from Senator Murkowski's
extra appropriation. That's some of the good news tonight.
Yeah, that's the good news.
Yeah. Great.
And I don't want to dilly-dally around with that 10 million.
No.
I want a turnkey design. And so we need to press DEC and EPA to see exactly what standards we have to meet.
Yeah, and well, we know the standards that we have to meet. We have all of that information, but in terms of what treatment process is going to be best to get us to that standard, that we don't have a definitive answer on that. We have an idea of where it's going to go. Last thing I would say is, if you look at the amount of money each individual community got, Wrangell's tied for the top. We got the same amount as Sitka and Ketchikan, I believe, and we got more than Petersburg and a lot of our other neighbors for this project.
Yeah. So I don't want to squander that. I want quick action on that.
And going back to water quality, I think this next time around for the annual quality report, we're going to actually post a comparable between other communities so you guys can see our water quality compared to other communities.
And a poster from ours from years past.
Yeah.
There's definitely big changes and big differences, for sure.
So you can see that we're among the best in the state now.
Yeah. My friends use the simple Brita filter. You know, store water in their refrigerator. And
how old's Olga Nora? She's been drinking Wrangell water for how long?
Right.
95 years old.
I mean, the take-home message is the chlorine has always been there. Now you're getting more chlorine, you're getting less disinfection byproducts.
Mm-hmm.
That's essentially, if I was to sum it up in one sentence, that's it.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tom. That was really
thank
great.
Thank you, Tom.
Okay, thank you.
We'll publish his written report, I imagine, on the website.
Okay, great.
Good.
Thank you, Tom. Next up, Chief Meek, if you would.
Yes, sir.
Good evening.
You have a couple of exciting things to tell us.
Well, I've got a lot of exciting stuff going on, but we'll try to keep it reduced. What I'm here to talk to you tonight about is an application that we're implementing. It's a regular phone application. Started looking into it going back about a year ago. Hit some roadblocks, but with the new superintendent, he's very approachable, very much into open communications. We've sat down, we've talked about a lot of different topics. One of the main topics that we've talked about is what happens in a critical incident. And we've had a couple test runs, and I'll tell you right now, the first thing that fails is communication. I'm gonna tell you right now, every time you have a critical incident, the first thing fail will be communication. Somebody will be left out. There'll be a gap in some type of communication. This application is meant to help mitigate that. What it does is it sets up an immediate contact point between the schools and not just our dispatch center, but our police officers. It's two-way communication. So if you have an emergency at the school, instead of picking up your phone, calling 911, getting a dispatcher who also is a correctional officer, who also is a call taker, who has many different purposes. If you call 911, you're going to get the dispatcher, 911, what's your emergency? They're going to get the information from you. They're going to take that information. They're going to put it on the radio and relay it to a police officer who will start responding at that time. That can lead in a delay from anywhere from 1 minute to 5 minutes, depending on how quickly information can be exchanged. What this app does is it allows for an immediate exchange. If there's an emergency at the school, they open up their phone, they push the app. It sends an immediate notification that there's an emergency. It'll be tied to a specific person. It's going to come in on everybody's smart devices. It'll come on to everybody's laptop computers and their desktop computers. What it does is it rings into our dispatch center. If there's an emergency at the school, somebody pushes that button, it goes immediately into our dispatch center, and it goes to every smart device that our officers have. In that amount of time, there's communication going back. What is your emergency? By then, you already have officers on the way. You're cutting out that 2 minute to 5 minute delay. Officers are on the way. The person is now able to either talk to text, whatever it is. In addition to, we are now able to get multiple people involved. If I have one person working a dispatch center and the five of you call 911, who do you think is going to get the call answered?
Just one person.
One person. I have 4 911 lines. Anything over 4, you're just going to get a deadline. At least in this way, somebody has an emergency. They can talk to text. They can type it in. It immediately comes up on everybody's screens. Real-time communication. The reverse is also true. We've had some situations right outside the schools where we've had some emergencies. In one such case, we had a suicidal person who was outside the school. Now we have an issue of officers talking to the dispatcher, giving information, getting information back. And at some point, the dispatcher has to contact the schools, put the school into lockdown. There's so much time wasted in that when all we have to do is send a reverse notification, which will go to every single teacher, staff member who has a smart device. They're looking at their laptop computer. They're looking at their desktop computer. There's an emergency situation. Please lock your doors. Shelter in place. Or there's an emergency situation. Everybody who is in the elementary school, if you're in grades 4 and 5, evacuate out the front. If you're in grades 3 and under, stay locked down in place. We have a means of communicating instantaneously and cutting down a lot of the time needed for our officers to respond. If any of you have listened to my presentation to the schools on how we're going to combat any type of active threat, first thing you hear is time. We have to have time. From the moment an incident starts, even if the officer is already in the parking lot, you have a 30-second delay. This is cutting that delay down to nothing so that emergency responders are already on the way. It's a great tool for the schools. Josh Garrett embraced it thoroughly. We've already got it signed off, ready to go. They're doing the setup of it right now, implementation. After that, it'll just be IT and installations into people's smart devices and into their desktops. Now, I'm going to expand on that a little bit. It's great two-way communication. It's instantaneous. It has other applications. Let's look at the building you're sitting in. If somebody came in the front office and they're causing a lot of problems, they're upset for reason. This is a government building. People tend to come here upset, want to complain. Same style of communications. Push the button. We know there's an emergency. Somebody's already on the way. We'll get more information as we're coming. You can do the same thing on a variety of different buildings. So if you keep an open mind, it may be something that we start considering for other areas of our borough that we need to have that instantaneous communication and the ability to have a rapid response.
Couple of questions. Is the location automatically recorded? I mean, is there a GPS factor into it?
Everybody, like if somebody has a desktop, it'll be ringing in as their desktop. We're still working out the mobile application as far as GPS. But if I know that Mr. Garrett is the fourth grade teacher, Mr. Garrett is in the fourth grade classroom, I know where the fourth grade classroom is, I'm already on the way to him.
The other question is, are the other law enforcement entities in town, can they be looped into this?
That's the intent, is that all of us will be looped into it so that if there's an emergency, because I have relied on our Alaska Wildlife Trooper and our federal forestry officer.
Right.
And when we had CBP here, having unified responses, whether it's a search warrant, when we need additional personnel, it's a hostile active situation where we need extra people for security, they always get called in and they're always willing to assist.
I'd like to thank Chief Meek for the initiative on this. I mean, it's certainly something that's going to serve the school system well, something that's going to serve the borough well. We did jointly fund this together, this application with the school system, good shared partnership there. Not to mention Gene also secured a $218,000 school resource officer grant. That's essentially what it's going to be used for. I know that we've made it higher. We have to introduce them to the assembly this one of the next meetings. But again, another phenomenal way to make use of some of these federal funds. And, just look at the stats of the police department in terms of drug busts, in terms of safety measures occurring at our school system and across the borough. Look at the amount of DUIs that we've raked in over the course of this period since June has been in charge, as opposed to years past. I mean, the stats are there all the way through. This police department has really transformed thanks to Gene. So the continued pressure and experience, it makes all the difference. So thank you.
I'll be honest. All I've done was let the officers know all I have to do is go out and walk. We'll take care of the rest of it. And they are.
Well, you're listening to the community, and that's what we wanted, especially the protection of our schools. So thank you.
We're getting there. Still a lot of room for improvement, but we're getting there.
Yeah.
Thanks, Gene.
Great. Thanks. Appreciate it. Questions, Assembly Member DeBoard?
How long before it should be up and running? It just goes through.
We should have it hopefully within a month ready to rock and roll. We've already started through the initial process. I'm working with their install folks, and they're pretty good. We are the first agency in Alaska that I know of to have one of these communication systems installed. They actually gave us a pretty good discount because of it, and because they're wanting to encourage others to use their system.
This is not open to the public, correct?
This is for
staff, and
this will be for school staff. The public, we can't put an emergency out to the public and manage the response.
Right, that's what I was getting.
That would be the answer. Oh, that'd be a nightmare.
And then we will consider it borough-wide as city offices employees. Yeah.
Well, I think it's just a great idea because we can actually divide it up. You know, City Hall could be one. Community Center could be one. As people have emergencies, I mean, everybody's tied to their smart devices now. So all you have to do is open up your phone and push the button, and it starts a call. If you're able to give more information, great. But you have somebody already knowing that there's an emergency and they're already on the way. And if it's a false alarm, okay.
We'll take with that. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Gene. Last but not least, we have Katie Hermans, our new finance director, who's joined us. Her and her rock star husband have joined the full
chair. Thank you.
Thanks, Gene. And Katie's hit the ground running on a lot of things. I mean, we're hitting audit season, we're hitting budget season, rate season. I mean, it's amazing. I'm surprised she's still with me. give us some rope. This is the first real Q1, Q2 reports. We're going to continue to refine these. But if you have any questions for Katie, there's also an accounts receivable for utilities for the harbors on there, and then she's got a little bit of analysis to share if you'd like.
Just wanted to start off by saying it's an honor to be here both tonight and in the Rainville community. Jeff and I are just so thrilled to be here, and really have loved growing to know you guys over the last few years in just a slightly different capacity, but very excited to call Rainville home now. With that, I, like Mason said, we really have hit the ground running the last month or so that I've been on the team here. Has entailed quite a bit of learning, one, and doing a lot of catch-up work. So we've been without a finance director for several months at this point, and what that means is we deal with the community needs as they arise, and so some of the work that would be considered routine gets pushed as lower priority, right? So I'm coming on board, I'm looking at going, okay, what is it that we need to do? Where do we need to catch up in order to keep things moving forward while we're also simultaneously getting ready to start the FY27 budget process? So with that, we do have a few things that we're catching up on, not the least of which is some reconciliations for the bank statements. Grant reporting is a big one that we're working on getting caught up on. And keep in mind, these things were in historically good shape. So we're talking about just the few months where we've not had a whole team of finance officers. So I've not seen anything concerning in the time that I've looked at all of our financials. I feel very comfortable coming in that things are in good shape. We're just slightly behind timelines, but we're getting there. And so with that, the quarterly report that you have before you, like Mason says, we have some work to do on it. I am the first one to admit that I do not know what all of those numbers are yet. I do not know what the stories are that they represent yet. But what I do know is because we are a little bit behind in some of those reconciliations, especially with the accounts receivables, that type of thing, the numbers are materially close to where we are, but they may not be exact right now. So quarter three, when I come to you in the next 3 months, is going to look a lot more accurate. We're going to have a lot more to tell you, a lot more story to tell you on where we're at year to date. But just from, you know, high level trend analysis, what I can say is we're right on track. So we've got a little bit of plus, a little bit of minus in every department, but department agency wise, we are exactly where we would anticipate being halfway through a fiscal year. We've had some unanticipated expenditures that have come up. They've come before you. You've approved those. We've made those adjustments to the FY26 budget. You'll see that in there listed as FY26 budget and amended. So we can account for those things that you guys have already approved in those changes. So I hadn't planned on getting too deep this quarter around, but if you have questions, you know, feel free to throw them at me. I'll try my best to answer them. Mason may be able to fill in. And if I can't, I can certainly get back to you with those questions.
That's perfect, Katie. Thank you.
Yeah. I look forward to working with all of you. Assemblymember Dward's already come in my office several times, but I just want to extend that to all of you. My door is always open, both figuratively and literally. I love talking about this stuff. I love learning more. You guys have the information that I'm still learning as a new community member. So please do come in and visit.
Great. And you've already called a meeting for the Finance Committee.
Yes, ma'am.
And we still have an opening for a member of the public.
Do we, or is that
we still have
Ryan? One.
No,
it is Ryan Herman.
He withdrew.
Oh, he withdrew.
Yeah. Right. So
he withdrew like this week?
No, like months ago.
We will talk.
Okay. Yes.
Maybe we can.
Okay.
Maybe Ryan.
That'd be great.
I asked Katie to keep us up on if you spot any trends. And especially in accounts receivable, and I've already asked you about that. So,
yes, ma'am, yeah. We, you know, still working our way through those. I do not see anything at this time that is concerning. I believe we're right on track with where we should be. And we are, as a team, looking at, you know, catching up, making sure that sales tax is in compliance. We're going to be looking at property tax. We are starting a sales tax audit with an external investigator at the end of March. That's standard practice in our code, so we will be doing that. It's going to help me kind of get a better idea of where we're at with that. But we'll be looking at property taxes, ensuring that's up to date, and just starting to tighten up a little bit on some of those procedures, if you will, because the code is already there. Now it's our job to enforce that and ensure that we're doing what we need to as fiduciaries for the community.
Thank you. And every question I've asked you, you've been very accurate and prompt. So thank you. Any comments or questions, Assembly?
Nobody could be happier than me.
I know.
Probably true.
Thank you, Katie.
Absolutely.
Okay, I'll try to keep it brief, but the mayor has asked me to compose a list of key accomplishments for 25. So I'll go over them really quickly. This is something we do each year.
Yes.
It was a record year in terms of capital projects, in terms of economic development, in terms of employee retention. Thanks, Katie. So I'm going to breeze through these a couple. Over $30 million invested in community infrastructure, most majority of that state and federal grant funds that are competitively achieved. So credit to our team for doing that. The completion of the water treatment plant, $24 million. St. Michael Street, in excess of $1.3 million. Reese Street High School parking lot, no cost to the taxpayer. Got her done. I see it's being used today. I was up at the school system. That's a real nice addition. Wanted to do that since 1984.
We made
fun. We don't say that. We don't want to say that. But yes, we did. And Myers Check Harbor replacement. We got that done for the community down there. This year, thanks to Steve Miller and Amber Holliday. At half the cost, favorable bids. The Harbor Anode Project, taking care of our infrastructure that was never taken care of initially. Got that done. Generator overhauls, two generator overhauls, unit three, unit five. We hadn't had any generator overhauls, I think, in the previous couple managers. So this is an exceptionally important thing in terms of resiliency at our power generation department. We had our emergency operations plan overhaul overhauled in March. We'll have our hazard mitigation plan approved for you guys. Clearing and preparation of the mill property for your development. Couldn't be better. We had a blank canvas to work with, which has been in large part an attractive factor to all these stakeholders. I remember taking Bert Stedman down there, our state senator. I won't say the exact words he said, but you're not going to get any attention the way it is. And essentially, he was exactly right. So we did that thanks to Will and Shorty Tonsgaard for being a great partner on that. We got the McKinnis Street planning in front of us, and we're working through design right now. We will have that under construction. That's Audison's Hill this next summer. So main downtown corridor. And then we got some exciting news. Well, I'll speak to that a little bit later, but that there may be a batch plant coming in 2027. So we may work with AMHS to work through some of the residential corridors. We know Third Avenue, we know First Avenue are the pain points for people up on the hill up there. So we got that on our minds for 2027 after our work in 2026.
And we recognize the drainage problems.
That's causing in large part the spotholes. From a land development asset activation perspective, Alder Top Land Sales, happy to report that all of our lots in rows 1 and 2 have sold at this point. We're still waiting for final payment. The only lots that remain for public auction are 21 and 22. Those are your side lots when you're looking from the waterfront at the subdivision. A lot of us were a little bit, we were a little uncertain of how it was going to pan out, but a very successful sale, a discipline, thanks to Director Thomas, thanks to Kim for handling the public auction all the way through. It's a lot of maintenance on her side of things. We got our 5th and 6th Avenue industrial lots all sold, done. That was an industrial expansion that people said would never happen. We do have a phase 2 planned in future fiscal periods. We have an advancement of a trust land office exchange that I'll speak more tonight and give the community the best details I can at this time. We got the mill site prepared for future industrial users. We have a growth in our tourism schedule. It'll be the highest year of tourism we've had in history this year, 68,000 passengers, maybe in a little bit of excess of that when you factor in some other stakeholder groups. And we have 27 to be a modest growth period as well. We have increased marketing and promotion of the borough across the board. We got a new logo. We have a new marketing department. Social media presence has been better. It's fight. That's why we get a lot more public comment on things on social media. So we don't view it as a bad thing.
Communication.
Ongoing positioning of harbor and marine facilities as a regional economic asset. I think we're seeing that with the J. At the economic development level, we also got the search planning development into construction this year. That's 12 additional housing units to the community on top of the 13 housing units that are already being developed right now by the private sector. So that's great. I appreciate Director Thomas for mentioning that. We got our child care initiative done with Lincoln High to up to 40 new spots between a partnership with Wrangell Public Schools, Lincoln High, and ourselves. Across the line, that was a measure that was taken through the community leadership group that we formed. We have continued relationships we're building with our tribal partners. We had the Wrangell Timber Initiative for working, met with the chief of the Forest Service about 3 times this year, which is, I don't know, there's something more down Ripple Hawton. Do you meet with the chief in the Forest Service?
I'm in Wrangell, so I have.
Very rare. And we've been gracious enough to get a lot of his time. We have a good map for how we want to proceed with the Tongass. I do see that there is a new disclosure. I can't remember the terminology off the top of my head, about 85 million board feet slated on the Tongass for this next year. So the administration is trying to meet the intent of the goal for more advanced timber harvest. Over $30 million put into work. When we look at the economic developments, opportunities we've created, it's unmatched in terms of the amount of dollars that are flowing into the community or will shortly. So I want to provide a look forward. Like I said, Alder Top, we have a couple more lots to sell off the side of the subdivision. We redesigned the subdivision so that we could sell another 4 here in a phase 2. It'll likely be a spring auction. Staff needs to deliberate that internally, but there will be 4 more lots in addition to the 2. For a total of 24 lots up for auction, which is exceptional. We will have a new public safety building roof and siding going into the summer. That'll be in construction. It won't be a flat roof. It'll be a pitched roof. How many years does the community want of that? Again, in the same way, the school system will have a brand new roof and siding over their facilities. All 3 buildings will get overhauled in some shape or form. That's another $12 million, roughly. Actually, it's 12.7. That'll go to our school system this year. Again, competitive state grant funds, community bond to afford the match. We'll have our waterfront filled out. Talked a little bit about that tonight in our EDA work session. That's been, again, 9 permit modifications since, I don't know when it first started, but the community's wanted that for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Regardless of what they want out there, they wanted it filled. So we're going to start there in partnership with American Cruise Lines, which obviously we just had our special meeting on January 7th to approve moving that forward together. We'll have McKinnis Street, like I said. We'll have the Reservoir Bypass fitted out. How many years have we been talking about that? 2015 at least. We'll have a new trap and skeet range. So that's an ADF&G investment that's going to be made to our community. This time of year, you'll have stadium lighting. You'll be able to do outdoor activity in the wintertime even. That's an option. We're going to do that with the Rod and Gun Club. I know Assembly Mel Powell, along with Scott McCullough, is a part of that. We have this new ACL partnership, as I said, from an economic development perspective. We have work to do with AML, like we shared tonight. There we have the facility design. It's almost a rinse and repeat of Petersburg's design. A lot of disruption in the shipping and freight logistics industry in the region, well beyond Wrangell. We will be working with them to get to a final solution. Those numbers will be shared. I would like to point out, I really appreciate Jim Freeman. He was part of our coalition meeting. That's the second time he's seen that presentation. I got to meet with Jim at the Wrangell Action Group December sometime, and it was really informative. I appreciated it. That was a great discussion. It reminded me that those roundtable discussions are one of the best ways to get through to community groups. And to Jim's point, we will get barge numbers out there. We are currently working through a draft lease agreement to present to AML to understand the overall impact to ratepayers, to the community. We also will have on February 3rd, a commercial fisherman meeting, free beer, not by purchased by the borough, but I'm going to either purchase it myself or we'll get Rangers to sponsor it. We'll be in City Hall, so we will be at the Nolan Center. We're going to have the beer, and we're going to have a roundtable discussion. Port Commissioner Chair Yeager said I had to offer something free to have people show up. So
and that was one of our goals, to support our fisheries.
It is. And, you know, we're doing a lot of work on the sea otter front. We're doing a lot of work in terms of the infrastructure that we're providing. We've invested over $100 million in our ports and harbor systems compared to Petersburg's $40 million over the last two decades. So, you know, I think we're doing our part, but we want to make sure we're hitting the mark. You know, there's a lot of things we're not hearing of. You know, we advocated at the Ketchikan Board of Fish to much success. We're working with our delegation on a number of fishery issues. But I want to hear from people locally. So I appreciate Jim Freeman, and I appreciate Antonio Silva and Tanner Smith that came up with the idea. Full disclosure, I was waiting on them to kind of give me a date. So that's the date. I'm setting it tonight, February 3rd. On top of that, we have this JAG thing. JAG thinks that JAG Marine Group could be the biggest opportunity. I think it is the biggest opportunity to redirect Wrangell to a brighter future. 50 years of enhanced job creation, workforce development pipelines. This community we would be seeing with the investments that would be made. It also hits the mark on a lot of the community planning that we've done. We have GreenSpark that we'll be entertaining. Again, we'll do a lot of myth busting with that. This isn't a 500 megawatt data center. It's a 2 megawatt. Water consumption is low. The power matrix, if you will, it is rather complicated, but it's really easy for me to break down as a SEPA board member and why I think it's in our best interest to achieve this project together. Increase power sales, result in lower community rates. And it's also, you know, it's a scarce resource, SEPA's power, and we have a firm commitment of the 24 megawatts off of Tai. And if we don't use it, it goes to Ketchikan, which isn't maximizing the resources we have available. It gets a lot more complicated than that, but I will stop at that point. We have a lot of SEPA grid resilience and capacity measures. Some of those will be really exciting and forthcoming to share with the community, one of which is already the transformer and substation improvements that will occur in Wrangell to expand our capacity to the mill property and beyond. On the land exchange, so I have tonight several things to talk about, some of which will be in executive session, but I've been working a lot with the Trust Land Office on land exchanges. I sat through a resource management committee meeting, which is like their planning and zoning, and their board of trustees is like their assembly for comparison's sake. And so we are exchanging the 27 acres in between the golf course, hole two of the golf course, that's the easternmost facing hole, all the way down to Ketchikan Ready Mix. That's 27 acres of light industrial land that they will rezone to residential space. They want to do 27 one-acre parcels for a subdivision. They've committed to a three-year time to develop that subdivision. There will be power there, not water and sewer initially. Could be very well down the line, but certainly not initially. And in return, we're looking at achieving 266 acres for our 27. Many of those acres are indicated on the map. I will share that in my manager's report. One of them is Sawdust Hill across the golf course. There's a little triangle wedge across by adjacent to Volunteer Park. There is the triangle adjacent to Search campus and our reservoir that we want for critical infrastructure. We have another 73 acres adjacent to Aldertop that we'll be looking at, and we'll be looking at Pat's Landing and the island by Sandy Point there. So those are the properties we're looking at achieving. Again, 27 acres is what we're giving up, and we're going to get 266, and we do have a plan. The Assembly and I are going to talk a little bit of a strategy tonight. So that's the land exchange. Amber's capital projects report's in there. I'm not going to go over it again, but if somebody has any questions for Amber or I believe she's still on the line.
Yes.
From an ACL perspective, I wanted to comment again on the design. I know that that was a bit of a Facebook uproar from my understanding. The concept, and we're going to do a little MythBuster sheet and pass that off to Assembly Member Dalrymple tonight. That's the simple version, one pager. We got a six pager for people too. But you know, it's just, yeah, there, that's a simple one. It's just a concept, right? And there's multiple concepts we work through. But in high level, we're going to fill the whole waterfront. That's the goal. And we'll see how far we get. And it could be something where this dock is parallel to the new waterfront. That's a nice accommodating space for it, for what ACL needs to do. But it's in our best interest to try to figure out a perpendicular setup for that ramp, that dock. And if there's the opportunity to either slant it or move it in more, we certainly will. Moral of the story is we're not going to approve a development plan that impedes City Dock in any way, the mill dock and the Marine Service Center and the entrance to the Inner Harbor. So
I rest fuel barge and all of that.
Rest assured, like, very warranted concerns from the community. I wish it would have been a different concept that was shared, because I think it would have reduced some of the discussions and misinformation out there. However, we're looking at it eyes wide open, and we'll get to a good decision through this EDA grant process even. So a little bit on the ACL. We are pursuing for last municipal bond bank issuance for our waterfront. The assembly authorized $4 million issuance. I'm meeting with bond council tomorrow to discuss final issuance tax status, and then we'll roll into issuance in the spring months, March, April, at which point we'll have competitive solicitation for filling out our waterfront. That work should be completed by June, July, which is very, very exciting and timely. Talk to you guys about the land exchange. JAG, like I said, in EDA, I've talked to these guys each day for like the last 8 weeks. It's very serious. We're composing a white paper for the Coast Guard right now that's 20 pages in content, plus about another 60 pages in appendices. This is a white paper that speaks to the capacity of the community to wrangle everything from a housing perspective to a school capacity to the 6,000 foot runway we have with the weight limits on the runway, all the way down to utility capacity and consumption demand specs,
child care,
all the way through everything you could imagine for husband and wife moving to Wrangell in the Coast Guard. And so we're making a very compelling pitch, or we're trying to be the best candidate for one of the polar security cutter home ports, as well as achieving an investment from the state and the feds or combined to have a state-of-the-art shipyard facility that would maintenance a lot of Coast Guard and naval fleet. So we're very optimistic about it. We're working with our federal delegation. They've been briefed on this when I went to DC. We continue to have those discussions along with JAG, and they're very productive partners. We will have some action tonight related to a budget amendment. I'll speak to that later. We will have some action on the February 10th meeting to approve a design package for that shipyard facility, so we can throw that in front of the Coast Guard. We purchased a new tent for Milk Run Music Fest. Yeah, Assemblymember Powers is on that board. Noel Center and Parks and Rec is going to purchase a $15,000 tent. You guys can probably recall the old tents we used to have out there for weddings and stuff. Those flimsy suckers broke. And so now we have a nice setup that's, you know, can be mobilized to different sites. This is something that will certainly benefit Milk Run Music as they continue to present offerings to the community. It'll be great for Parks and Rec activities and marathons and cross-country meets and 4th of July events. So this is a very beefy temporary structure that can be put up in various locations. It's got a branded logo on it. And I just appreciate what Milk Run Music is doing for the community and what Mesa look like here this year. So rock star board, and enjoy bringing that one home. We'll rent that back to them, recoup our costs on the tent overall, and then some. So I think it's a great opportunity for the Nolan Center and Parks and Rec. Again, talked about the commercial fishermen's meeting, audit status, we're moving forward. Katie mentioned a little bit about sales tax. We are pushing that forward. I'd like to thank Robbie Marshall for getting that off the ground. Alaska Marine Lines, we talked about it. They're working on design. We're going to sit down with leadership and discuss alternatives, and then we'll present some numbers before a final lease agreement could be pursued. I want to shout out to Gary Allen and the DOT crew for an exceptional job this winter months. They have three people in their crew. They're in charge of the entire airport, the AMHS parking lot, as well as the whole Zamobia Highway. Them, and as well as our public works crew, have done such an exceptional job, especially when you juxtapose that to Juneau, Haines, Ketchikan. Ketchikan just says we're shutting down roads for the winter. deal with it. We'll open them back up when the snow thaws. And that's no joke. That's what they do. And they have a color coded map. We don't do that. And we have a leaner crew. We have less resources. But I'll say it publicly, we have a better crew across the board. It's the best in the region. And I'm thankful for all that they do. We're kicking off our budget process. Budget worksheets to go out to directors this next month of February. And then we'll begin developing our first draft along with our rate structure for the year. I don't anticipate any crazy drastic rate increases. We've been pretty diligent as an assembly manager over the last 3 years to have prescribed inflationary adjustments that have kept us on track. And then Amber and I will be working on a number of CDS and CAPSIS requests as submitted for you guys for the state and federal priority list. So that'll mirror up that. FEMA landslide update. All our projects have been through review and they just continue to sit in holding. So we're really pushing on getting that $1 million back. We have seen some money flow back, but it's only been like $75,000 out of the million. So two projects left to get refunded, reimbursed for rather. And those are expected to come up in the next couple months. So we're grateful for FEMA, but it's a long road, as many agencies are in federal government. So I got some direction I need from you guys on a number of items under assembly of business, but that concludes a very long and not brief manager's report.
It's good though.
Yeah.
You've got one thing.
Oh, yeah. So you do it. That's cool.
Well, there's two things you forgot.
Yeah, I'll let you have
it. You buried the lead, but you forgot the pool roof.
That's actually what I'm going to talk to you. I didn't forget about it. That's direction, but I'll let you take the money one.
Well, go ahead and announce it.
We got $10 million for a wastewater treatment plant. That's what Tom was referencing. So another big win for the community of Wrangell.
We're not going to dilly-dally around, are we?
No. So we got over $15 million secured in state and federal competitive funding this year. Petersburg did get $8 million. We got 10. Sitka got 6. So I think we're the same type of project. And we're very grateful for Senator Murkowski for bringing that win across the line for Wrangell yet again. And that combines also with the $2.5 million we got from Representative Begich and Senator Murkowski for the public safety building, which is going in construction. So a lot of other funding that we got for a number of projects, but that's another one checked off our list. And if you think about all the priorities the borough had 5 years ago, maybe even 15, 20 years ago, we're getting them all done in 4 years. And that's pretty exceptional. So thanks for reminding me.
Any questions? And we do have a report on Ports and Harbor and the library. Library, please check out all of the programs, the new programs at the library, the Nolan Center, and Parks and Rec, offering programs for young and old. All right, anything else? All right. Clerk's report, please.
Other than what's in my report, and there's a couple of things, we are looking at canceling the April 28th meeting and just having one assembly meeting in April on the 14th. As the assembly knows, there are two things that happen typically on the second meeting in April, and that would be the public hearing for both the, public hearing and adoption of the fee and rate schedule, and also the annual fee and rate schedule, and also the approval or consideration of the tax-free days or day. I have already communicated with the director of the chamber, and she said they have a meeting coming up, and they will consider and send that letter to me shortly. In the code, it does say for the fee and rate schedule, the annual fee and rate schedule, public hearing and adoption or whatnot, on or before the second meeting in April. So if we do it on the 14th, we're safe. And then also we do have scheduled a work session for between the school and the assembly. And we have communicated with the superintendent to find out if we can either cancel that meeting or reschedule it. So we will let you know.
And I will be joining the assembly meeting on February 10th remotely.
Yeah, so we'll have them right on the wall. That's all I have.
Thank you. Any questions, assembly? All right, moving right along. Mayor and assembly business. I think you had some
Just a quick few things. So it was an assembly goal in 23 that we blast the east ramp of the runway to expand hangar space. We've investigated that with the Department of Transportation through a series of years, actually, that we've looked at this. DOT is not willing to throw any money at this, so it would be all on the borough to contract this out. We would apply for a land use permit for a blasting area that is desired. We have that mapped out if we do it, but DOT also is making us responsible for the cost of putting in a temporary fence that is to TSA and FAA standards, which is quite costly, in excess of $100,000. St. Michael Street fence was 19 grand, and that was, you know, a 20th of what the fence line would look like out there, so you can kind of do the math on that. And that's probably not to spec anyway. So, you know, we don't really have a great path to move forward to make this a net zero option. We were looking to try to get other stakeholders involved, and we will continue. For example, I know Alaska Airlines needs additional storage capacity out there. Maybe they'd be willing to make an investment to make this break even. I'll continue to pulse those options, but I want to get consensus from the assembly that you don't want me to move forward with borough funding on this.
Let's say the assembly. I know my answer is no. Assembly member Dalrymple.
I guess mine is no in specific right now.
Yeah.
But I think as an economic development opportunity, we should still pursue that project, whatever it is, because that airport can expand its infrastructure use. I don't really know who owns the hangars or what, but I have heard that Alaska Airlines would like more space out there. I think probably everybody would. So I don't know if that would be, anyway, as an overall objective, I think we should continue to work on that.
You bet. We'll keep it.
Put it on there. The back burner?
Yeah, what do you put in the back burner? We'll put it there for continued, you know, continue to let it simmer there. And there are two requests into DOT for hangars adjacent to the east ramp there. The one, if they want to construct two hangars, and we're holding that up right now by me not making a decision. So there would be two hangars. Those would not preclude us from further development on the east side, make it a little tougher. And we can blast the west side of the ramp too, so there's more space that can be achieved through that too. So there's options, but DOT can't not shell out any money and expect to reap all the rewards. That doesn't work for us. So
yeah,
we'll continue to work through options. Okay, got direction on that one. We are looking at two generators off of the American Cruise Line Empress that's parked out and currently under operation with Fonsgard, one of which is free in exchange for that building, the old mechanics building. The other one's $250,000. I'm not willing to recommend that we seek purchase of the three additional, that are not three. That's $750,000. I think we had your best and take what we need for backup generation for the concepts we're working for, as well as feeder four. So two generators, 3516 cat diesel generators, 1.8 megawatts apiece. That's 3.6 megawatts. That would back up most of feeder four altogether. That's Mobile Highway all the way up to the end of the road. Therefore, in-town generation building would not have to take care of that burden. It would be increased capacity for generation, and 3.6 megawatts is certainly enough for the data center backup. That would only be 2 megawatts. Additionally, we do have one generator unit six, I guess you could call it, in the in-town powerhouse here that's not hooked up. It's something that we purchased a long time ago. It is capable of doing so. We could get up to 3.6 or 4.6 and 4.8 if we combine those two. So I'd like you guys' head nods for me to bring an item on February 10th to seal that up. A new 3516 is well over $1 million. So
that's what I was going to ask you. How old is this generator?
Rebuilt.
How many hours?
I can't remember exactly, because there's we get to choose what the second one is, but okay. The ones we would be choosing from had been rebuilt in 2021. Great maintenance logs, low hours.
Do we have a nod for him to
bring that forward?
And what are your questions right now, or do you want that when you bring it forward?
I'll bring it. Yeah, you can talk to me after the meeting, and then we can talk about it in discussion when that ends up. Finally, and this is when we get to the pool roof and some of the roofing projects. So we, like I said, have public safety building at the school. We have road projects, lots of different things. So we have a lot of competing projects for funding. We don't have a whole lot of excess funding, if you've been paying attention to what you have. We have $1.233 million that we got local consistency and tribal funds through the COVID era, and that's been sitting in deferred revenue. It basically can be applied to any of these projects that we're looking at. We need to bid out public safety building, the school, and the reservoir bypass to understand if we need that money to fund any of those projects forward. However, the Parks and Rec slope roof and flat roofs continue to leak significantly, and we do need to address those while we have contractors in town to address those issues. Thanks for coming. So my question to you guys, and Nolan Center's leaking in a certain area, it needs to be recoded, and there's a section of the Nolan Center roof that's leaking. So it's not pervasive throughout the building, it's just an area where the water's pooling up there. So my question to you guys is what is more valuable to you guys to achieve in the summer of 2026? Is it having the Parks and Rec roofs replaced, sloped, and pitched? Is it the Nolan Center, or is it the reservoir bypass? Is it come down to deferring the reservoir bypass to achieve the roof projects? If it, my recommendation would be do the roofs while you have contractors in town, the reservoir bypass structure, but it's been a project we've been long after. So difficult decisions, but I do need some direction. Not tonight, I just wanted to kind of lay the framework that's gonna be a discussion budget cycle. That's it for me on assembly business.
Assembly Member
Dalrymple,
did you have something?
I've been in general discussion with Mason on the request, I guess, and that's to take a moment and put in a document on the web all the current information on the that's mainly because we missed the public meeting. And I probably had more people come to me on that project, ask me questions about it. And I'm not the best source in a lot of that. So I would think it'd be really useful to just have something like that on the web, just refer people. There's been a lot of information, but on my mind, we've been getting it steadily. And even then, I don't know that I've captured it in my mind all that well. But a lot of it was also buried in the other documents, like police information and stuff. I think you've crafted a really good project. It's really nailed out, you know, all the questions as we've gone along. It's just good to have that in one place. That's easily readable and simple language. And it's not final either. You know, it's a project that's still under construction. So anyway, that'd be a request.
Appreciate it, Bob. So we have a very simple fact sheet right there, and then we have 6 pages that have 28 questions, the frequently asked questions related to the detail thing. We're going to put that on our website, put it on social media.
Yeah, one thing that I would be looking at, or I would think would be useful in there, would be brief timeline of our previous public involvements.
Yeah.
After those.
Actually in that previous that yes.
My fear there is that might be too long. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe I would just be something that I think more people would read something of the page or two.
Well, we got the really simple one, and this one's a little bit I can try to have a more Goldilocks scenario for a light read.
Let's call it.
Okay.
And the PowerPoint, the presentation that Kate made.
Yeah, and that's all recorded too, and it's going to be on our website if it's not
already. It will be. Yep. So it will be on this on our website under the meeting date.
And maybe there is a lot of existing stuff with their PowerPoints and stuff. It seemed to me there's enough interest in the public to have it as a special area, maybe under news instead of buried in our. I haven't met anybody that goes into our agenda packages just to get information. It's you got to really mine in there to get it. So someone just is right up front with a banner, easy to get to.
Yeah.
And it's mainly because we missed that meeting. I think we sort of slipped on some traction there.
Happy to do that.
Thank you. Anything else?